It's Tuesdays with Aaron. Here's Jason Wilde with Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers on ESPN Wisconsin.
It is the Aaron Rodgers Show. Tuesdays with Aaron. Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers. Time is short. We're running out of shows. Season's almost over.
That song never gets old.
Yeah?
It's a great song.
It is. It's a classic. I don't know if we pay royalties to them, but
probably should.
Maybe they should be happy that we're still using their stuff. How are you?
Rested.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
How's your calf?
It's there.
It's attached.
Yep.
You're wearing shorts today.
I am. Yeah. I thought. Look at you. R2. Nice. All Wisconsin. That's great.
Yeah. Well, Scott Tolzien will be pleased. He complains.
And Sam Decker.
Wisconsin stuff. What? It is attached. How does it feel?
It feels. Feels better.
Yeah.
Yeah. It feels better. See what happens this week. As far as practice reps, everybody's still concerned about them. I'm not, and thankfully, my teammates aren't either. But we'd like to get out there at some point and move around a little bit. Just depends on how it's feeling. I've been talking with Doc last week. Our trainers are awesome. We've been doing a lot of treatment and got some acupuncture as well, which always helps. But yeah, we'll see how it feels tomorrow and make a judgment on practice this week.
Well, we do care about your practice reps and
the collective we.
The collective we. Well, I personally.
Or we, the media.
I guess everyone does, except for apparently you and your teammates. But I'm going to get to that question because Tom Clements reminded me of an interesting story from a few years ago that I want to ask about.
Tom is wise.
He is.
Like a
he
shaman.
Doesn't really like us.
The shaman.
I'm here to tell you.
Yep.
But Mike McCarthy had said last week that he didn't see you practicing until Thursday at the earliest. Yesterday there was a revision to that.
Mike's got that ESPN, he can see things in the future.
And then he said that you're going to be examined or meet with Dr. McKenzie tomorrow morning, and then you'll set the plan for the week. So are you thinking it's possible you could practice in some way tomorrow?
There's always a chance.
Jeez. I'm having flashbacks to last year with the collarbone.
Are you really?
Well, that was kind of the standard answer.
Yeah.
So you're saying there's a chance.
I'm not sure. It just depends on how it's feeling tomorrow. And
okay.
Yeah.
I realize that I've asked over the last 4 years of this show my share of bad questions to you. I'm hoping this one isn't one of those. But is it not as big of a deal? And I'm not downplaying the significance of your injury. But would it be a bigger deal if it was your right calf and you had to push off on it when you threw? I mean, is it a little less of an issue because of that, or am I asking a bad question?
It's a hypothetical question, but you know how much I enjoy those. I think that the majority of my injuries I've sustained over my career have been to my left leg. Broken left foot, left knee surgeries, left hamstring injury, and now left calf. I can't say I've had a, knock on wood. I haven't had a very significant injury to my right leg during a football season. So I would have a hard time actually answering that with an intelligent answer, which I usually like to give semi-intelligent ones.
We prefer those.
So I'm not exactly sure how that would affect it because I do have to transfer weight from the right side to the left side, and the left side takes the initial in the shotgun takes the initial weight of the first step, the punch step in the shotgun that we take is on the left foot, and then obviously the crossover step is an important one on the left foot. Now the right is the anchor foot, but it's hard to say unless I sustain, and hopefully I never do, a significant injury on the right side.
Do you have any theory on why you've had such, if you were to have bad luck with injuries, they've been on the left leg? It was your right shoulder.
True, yeah, good point. I first injured my knee when I was 15 years old. And I think there's a connection between those things. It hasn't really been right since then. So I wouldn't be surprised if there is a connection between those injuries.
I mentioned the shoulder, and that was what I ended up talking with Tom Clements about this week. So I'm curious what your recollections are from that period after you injured your throwing shoulder against Tampa for the next month. Because I remember the story, and it was impressive how well you played against Atlanta after you had to go down to the Hudson Center that morning and convince them to let you play with the harness. But I guess I had forgotten. You basically didn't practice for that whole month, Tom said. How did that impact you as a first-year starter and as someone who, as Mike McCarthy said yesterday, really believes in the importance of practice and the value of practice?
Well, I played pretty good in three of the games.
Right.
As I remember. But the problem was I just couldn't throw. I was in so much pain, especially during the weeks. I wasn't able to get through a practice and to make the throws. And as the pain in my shoulder started to go away, the tendonitis in my shoulder crept up, and it was as painful trying to push through that. But it was a month of not really doing a whole lot of throwing, except on maybe a little bit on Friday and then on game days as we practiced back on Fridays in 2008. It affected me more as a young starter because the more reps you take, the better you're going to play, and the more looks you get at something, certain plays or defenses, obviously the better you're going to play. As I'm in my seventh year starting, 10th year in the league, I think those reps become a little bit less important as far as being able to play well on Sunday without practicing. I love the practice because I love the competition. I love being out there and be able to make some of the checks you're going to make on game days. I talk all the time about how to have faith in a guy, to be able to trust the guy to play well on Sundays, you got to see it in practice. And that's the case. You want to see the young guys making plays and doing things off of checks you make or off of just plays we're putting in that week. And you want to see them doing that. So you have that confidence when you break the huddle or when that play comes in, the first thing that comes to your mind is, Richard made a good, ran a good route on Wednesday on this play and made this catch. Or Devontae, ran a great adjustment on this play. And made this play in practice, so that when the ball's about to be snapped, you have that picture in your mind, and that's a positive image that you can attach to that play. Because I'll be limited in my practicing this week, just gonna have to get it done in other ways, which we've done in the past. In the walkthrough, in the film review with the guys, continuing to let my voice be heard, and then in the meetings as we go through the plan, putting my little stamp on things and giving guys the things to expect.
So it's more about getting the vibe from those guys, from what you see from them at this point in your career, than it is about needing the actual reps for you to feel good about what you're going to run, because you've run most of that stuff?
As far as it pertains to me, yes. For them, they obviously need reps with me, because then they can get a confidence in when the ball's going to come out and what spot I like to put it in. But for this week, they probably and the Lions week, you just didn't get a whole lot of that.
So what did you notice that didn't go the way you wanted it to, or how did it? We spent a lot of time talking about how not heroic, whatever word we're using, it was for you to come back the way you did, but we didn't really talk about how adversely affected you were during the week, because you didn't practice a whole heck of a lot going into the game to begin with. So what did you find was the biggest issue for you with your limited practice time last week before you, or 2 weeks ago before you played the Lions? The stuff you're talking about there?
Yeah, it wasn't anything mentally. It was just the physical part. Just I knew going in I wasn't going to be able to do a whole lot. Went out, actually did something I haven't done in a while. I went out for pre-game warm-ups and just with my cleats on and just threw the ball around a little bit with Matt and Luke Getzey. And it wasn't a whole lot. It was just kind of feeling the surface and feeling how my calf was responding to that. Now, once the adrenaline gets going, you're going to get a little bit of a boost. And was able to actually have a little bit of a run there when they played two-man and get about, 11 or 13 yards and then slide, in plenty of time. I don't think that affected the injury. The injury was making a quick movement in the pocket and just not having the strength in that calf to to withstand the pressure that I put on that leg as I moved to my right, and that was just the case. So unfortunately, it gave out on me on the outside, and then I was even more limited.
I'm glad you told that story because I was down on the field before the game, and I thought I was crazy thinking that I had never seen you do that before. That was
it'd been years,
yeah,
actual years.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. I appreciate you telling that story. Last thing about the calf, and then I'll.
I appreciate your appreciation there.
And I.
That's a cat pig line, and that's a Tauscher shout out.
Okay,
that's
well,
one of his favorite
you know, sometimes your sense of humor can be hard to get.
Yeah, yeah. So esoteric.
Is the biggest concern for you now not whether or not you're going to be ready to play, obviously, but worrying about having it go on you again in the game?
That's not a concern. If it happens, it happens. It's just, that's at that point, it's out of my control. I got to get myself in the best position to play, and then realize whatever limitations I might have moving. Maybe I won't have any. Maybe we'll get to Sunday and I'll feel great.
Yeah.
Or maybe I'll be very limited. But it just depends on how I'm feeling this week, and we'll adjust accordingly.
And do you feel like you're better now at because you've been dealing with it? Mentally knowing where the line is, you said I asked you this last week, and you said, "Well, pain is kind of the pain talks to you." But isn't it a little bit too late once the pain hits you? Like, don't you have to know before you experience real pain that you're pushing it too far? Like, and I don't mean this in any other way other than it's the truth. You're good at a lot of things. Okay, great arm. Great mind, all these things. But one of the things that you're best at is extending the play and making things happen that aren't necessarily in the play as it's drawn up. And the guy's making second reactions. I don't understand how somebody who's so good at that and has it come so naturally to them then prevents himself from doing it. How do you do it? How do you prevent yourself from doing what comes so naturally to you and you're so good at?
You just feel the pain when you start doing those things and you stop. You know, it's a mindset. I think going in, you have to adjust, and that will probably, you know, come with age as well. Realizing I can't maybe run as fast now. Hopefully, it doesn't get to that. I mean, I'm going to try and keep myself in such great shape. But the natural progression of life would assume that I will be a little less mobile as the years go on. Hopefully, I didn't start until 35 or 6 or 7 maybe. But
43.
It's just, yeah, you never know. Let's play 12 more years. but you just have to, you know, you have to go in being a little smarter. I think I didn't feel like moving to the right there was gonna pop it again, but it did, and came back and didn't have to move at all.
Okay, I was at an event last night in Kohler with Eddie Lacy, and by the way, for those of you listening, the Wisconsin Sports Awards are set for May 7th, and they're going to be in Kohler, so mark that down.
All right.
On your calendars. I wasn't necessarily talking to you specifically. I know you're a big Wisconsin Sports Awards guy, and everyone's very excited when you're there, but I was more letting everyone know.
Just excited about the new format.
Whatever that might be. Is that where you're the host the entire time? Or?
Yeah. Whatever that might be.
Well, you better have your jokes ready. But Eddie told this really good story about the Baltimore game, and it was meant as a illustration of your mental aptitude. He said, you're handing off the ball to him, and as you're handing him the ball, you're telling him...
You got safety.
Yes, that's the story he told.
That happens from time to time, yeah.
So... And folks can read about it at ESPNWisconsin.com, and the podcast is there as well. But from your perspective, can you tell us that story? Because I thought that was really neat.
Well, you know, I think in when you become an expert of the offense, it's more than just the X's and O's of the receivers and the guys running routes. It's what I love is understanding blocking schemes, because then you can really play the chess game of trying to get your team in the best play scenario or a really good play scenario. And then there's times where as the ball is snapped, you see a flash. You know, you see just kind of flashes of a safety rolling down, a corner coming, a linebacker scraping, various things. And there's been times where based on the scheme of that run play, I just will give him a reminder, you know, you've got the safety on this. The safety is unblocked.
Meaning he's the one you've got to beat.
He's the free hat. He's the free player who's unblocked in the play. And that'll happen from time to time. I don't know what else. I've said some other things to him, over, you know. I think I've said, you know, go outside maybe or cut back. But with Eddie, you know, he's so smart and such just a natural running back. You don't really have to tell him anything, but because he's, you know, 99 out of 100, he's going to make the right cut. But well, every now and then, I think, you know, remind him of that is something that doesn't hurt.
Was it your guy James ahead of Bowl?
Probably was.
Okay. I thought that was a fun story, and he's becoming a very good storyteller.
By the way, James Ahedibo, he was a captain. We played Detroit, and I said his last name, and I just want to verify that I said it right. And he said, "Yeah, it was perfect."
Oh, good.
So we had a little exchange there.
Good, because a year ago you wouldn't even say his name because you couldn't quite.
I didn't want to mess it up.
Right.
Yeah.
You knew how to say Matt Elam's name though when you were telling him what you thought of his hit on Randall Cobb.
Yeah.
There was another thing I wanted to talk to you about, and that was and you've said this before, and I love it. I think it's a great quote about how you earn your paycheck in the regular season and you write your legacy in the postseason. You were,
let's paraphrase, but go ahead. Yeah,
well, what's the direct,
I don't know,
I want to get it right, much like
something
James Ahedibo's name. I'd like to get it correct.
That's close enough. Yeah,
no, come on, what is it?
I think, what did you say? I don't think I'd said anything.
Wait a minute. You told me that I misquoted it and you didn't even hear me?
I wasn't listening.
Okay. That's. Well,
I was distracted by this picture that Madison drew. It's very good.
I said that you said that you earn your paycheck in the regular season and you write your legacy in the postseason.
I don't think I said write.
Okay. So what
create.
Do you create?
Cement.
Cement. Okay. Whatever
Grow.
The case is. The postseason's about your legacy.
Yeah.
You had the incredible Super Bowl run in 2010. What do you think your postseason legacy says right now, and how do you view the last few postseasons?
Well, not good enough. Yeah, not good enough. We've 1-3 since then, and two of them at home. We lost at San Fran, and we lost to San Fran, the Giants at home, and beat the Minnesota at home. In a game, I think most people think we should have won because their starter was out. But yeah, we haven't played good enough. I think we've learned a lot since then. I think, you know, it's a different team this year. You know, so this is not the same team that lost San Fran last year. This is a different team. You know, it's a different group of guys, a different attitude. I think we're in years past, playing at home has not meant the same thing in the playoffs as it does this year. I think we have not played like this at home in any of my years, to where there's a palpable feeling of dominance at home, that we just feel like when we step on the field, we should win the game. And it's a mindset that I think you know, the great teams in this league have that mindset. I guarantee you Seattle has that mindset. When they step on their home field, they think nobody can beat us. And it's a combination of a belief and a confidence and also an advantage that you can gain from your crowd or from the elements. And I think we have, with the renovations that we've done and the kind of crowds we've been getting, we have an incredible opportunity to have that kind of advantage at home that you really desire in the playoffs. And we've been playing really well at home. Dallas have been playing great on the road. They haven't lost on the road all season. So
they won at Seattle.
Yeah, it's going to be a great matchup.
What about you personally? I mean, I know the expectations you have and where the bar is set. You look at your numbers; they're not your typical numbers. How do you feel about how you've played, and how well do you have to play on Sunday and during this playoff run? Personally,
yeah, I mean, I have high expectations every time I take the field, and I think most people do of me. And that's how I want it. You know, the bar has been set high, and nobody's going to apologize for setting it. And I'm not sorry for the bar being up there. I love an expectation of greatness because that's what I expect of myself every time I take the field. And I know my teammates expect me to play well. So I go into the game expecting to play well, and excited about the opportunity to be a guy that my teammates can count on. And I know that everybody has their role, and my role is an important one, just like the other 40-45 guys are going to be suiting up, and we all believe in each other, and we need each other to hold the rope, as we used to say at Cal. Just do your part.
Oh, I like that. Is that a Tedfordism?
No, it was a Kevin Parkerism.
Kevin Parker?
KP.
I need to track him down.
If you watch the Cal games on TV, he's always the guy holding up the rope. Hold the rope! Yeah. But it's a good analogy for doing your part. Everybody in the same thing together and holding on to the rope together.
So I was reading Mike Silver's piece on you at NFL.com, which I thought was fabulous. It just goes to show
you were reading?
I was. Wow. I read a lot. Maybe not as much as you, but I do read a lot.
Yeah, I haven't been reading a whole lot. I needed to set a new New Year's resolution. The year I did set that I wanted to read a book a month, I got close. I'm very proud of myself.
Yeah, 10?
I think I was at 9.
Okay. That's pretty good given your schedule.
Yeah. It's like 7 or 8 until football season, and only one during the season is tough.
Well, it was nice to see Mike do something other than give his WTF reaction to the... It's still, I think, his proudest moment, and he's accomplished a lot. But I thought his story was great about you. But there was an anecdote in there that I had never heard. Uh-oh. About you on your way to Mexico to build houses.
Yeah.
And if you haven't read this, I tweeted out the link. Do yourself a favor and read it. There's some great stuff in there. He tracked down Seneca Wallace, who was very interesting to read. But I thought that anecdote was really interesting. It kind of reminded me of your... nutrition, was that the class?
Food appreciation. Yeah. Okay. Great class.
After all the time that we've talked about chips over the years, and I know you hate it when I bring up the chip on your shoulder.
Hate, I don't use that word.
Dislike.
Okay.
Sorry.
There's a song. Have you heard the song? Hate is a strong word, but I really, really, really don't like you. Interesting song. I don't use the word hate.
Do they play that right after the baking soda song, or is that a different?
They might. Yeah. No, playlist? It's an older song, actually.
Okay. I guess I'm wondering. You still have those stories to share with people. They don't necessarily motivate you to this point. You know, kids in a van saying you're never going to be an NFL player or whatever it might be. What's the motivation now? More than external, is it internal more often than not?
Yeah, it's definitely.
What is that? What are you?
I just got a funny text message. There's a couple of people listening to the show, so I just got a message, live message about the show. So, it's definitely
this
internal.
This is making me self-conscious now.
It's not about you. Just
okay.
Stop. But. Stories like that, I think when you're young and really impressionable in high school, those are really important years as you develop your ego and your sense of self and your self-esteem and stuff. And that story meant a lot to me. Not in a negative way, but a time where I just really felt like, you know what? I believe in my dreams, and I'm going to go get them. And it doesn't matter what you or anybody else say about it, because the most important thing is that I believe that I can do it. And that's what stuck with me more than anything. I couldn't tell you who said it or what mile marker we were at on I-5 as we went down there, but it's moments like that, I think, that especially as a kid, that you really can hold on to as moments of like, you know what, that moment, I remember when I was thinking I'm gonna do this, just watch.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool. All right, let's go inside the helmet, not over what you did last week, because you didn't have a game last week.
So why are we doing this segment then? I thought we
because I wanted to ask you what your favorite plays of the season were. You played 16 games. I know you've got the biggest games ahead, but were there a couple of plays that stand out for you? Because you can recall just about every play you ran, all 1,000 of them or whatever it is. Are there some favorites that stick out for you?
Yeah, there's a couple. I mean, the Miami game has a couple favorites. The first touchdown was a check that we hadn't talked about before. But it was a check we had in the plan. But we hadn't talked about it at all. And I actually went to that check. And it's fun when you can get 11 guys on the same page, even when it's something that you haven't really all talked about at the same time. Now, maybe I talked to the receivers about it, but you know, hadn't had the line in there, the back, and the receivers all in there at the same time. And to be able to make that check and throw a touchdown to Jordy was fun. It's just little moments like that. I remember a moment we played in Detroit back in I think it was 08, and I threw a touchdown to Donald, and he actually was supposed to be running a corner route on the play. But they brought an all-out pressure and actually kind of dropped him. And he, at about 7 or 8 yards, just kind of turned around at the perfect time. And I threw it to him as like a hot route. And he caught it for a touchdown kind of in between two guys. And it was those are the moments where it's like, you know, just to be on the same page without really talking about something, that's when the game gets really fun. You know, the throw to on the same note, the fake spike to Devontae, for him to have the presence of mind to have his eyes on me and then get out of bounds was great. And then the final play of that drive to Corliss, not having thrown him that specific throw, you know, in a live game before, but to have him on the same page as far as what type of ball would be coming, that's when the game gets really fun, because it's that unspoken communication where guys are dialed in, and in the moment, the most important moments of the game, they can still have their focus tight enough to do exactly what you think they're going to do. And that's when the game gets so much fun.
We always talk about the Chicago game after the relaxed comment, et cetera, and that starting your run of all the success you had after the 1-2 start. But was that Miami game really important, looking back on it now?
Yeah, because that was a good football team. You know, they didn't finish the way they wanted to, but that was a solid defense. Brent, I was excited for him to get the Pro Bowl, and I think he got a second-team All-Pro, Brent Grimes. Is that mm-hmm. right? He had a great season. They have a lot of really talented guys on that defense, and the offense actually looked like it got better as they went on. But in that environment, you know, with the kind of heat that was down there and the way that we battled in the last 4 minutes, getting 10 points was great. On the same line, a play that will never be in the stat book, but the touchdown to Devontae against Chicago was one of my favorites, as the ball kind of fluttered in the air, and I think everyone on the sideline went, no, no, no. And then he caught it for a touchdown kind of back left of the end zone that got wiped out by a holding call by our center there, which he's still upset about. I don't think it was holding.
I just think
it was the overwhelming strength of Corey Linsley.
But he tells a great story about that then, what was it, a couple of weeks later, where he's almost in the exact same position on what turns out to be another touchdown, and that time he lets the guy go instead of driving him into the turf?
Minnesota, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a guy who learned from that moment. Of the guys that, and I know you love all your teammates, but what he has done this year, maybe what LaTroy Guillon has done, stepping in for B.J. Raji, have there been some guys that you look at and say, we all had our part, we all held the rope, but these guys, it was really important for them to grab onto the rope? Are there guys that really surprised you and helped this team get to where it is?
Not surprised, maybe, but guys I was really proud of. And there's a number of guys who stepped up and played great roles for us. Corey Linsley, you know, Ha-Ha Clinton Dix has had a really good season for us. Morgan Burnett's had a great season. Sam Barrington has come from a guy who was just playing a little bit on the special teams, and now he's playing a good role for us, and he's done a great job. Obviously, Richard Rodgers and Devontae Adams, the efforts they've made. John Kuhn, I think, has had a phenomenal season, and I'm really proud of him and the accolades he's been given, I think, are well-deserved. Regardless of the role of fullback in the game anymore, he deserves the recognition that he's gotten. But LaTroy Guyon is one of my all-time favorite teammates. And that takes a lot for me to say, because he's only been with us for a little bit of time. But there's things about his personality that really remind me of Johnny Jolly. And I love Johnny. Johnny was such a great teammate and an incredibly charismatic locker room presence. And everybody who was around Johnny, he always enjoyed the stories and his energy and just the way that he had a passion for football. And I always appreciate that about Johnny. And LaTroy brings the same kind of passion. From the first day he got here, there was just an excitement about being in Green Bay. And just he kind of felt like this was a great opportunity for him to fit in and for him to be a part of something special. And he battled through a time where you didn't know if he was going to make the team.
He didn't practice most of training with his hamstring.
And he's become an important player for us. And more importantly, he's really kind of brought more of himself to the table. He's made some great pregame speeches. He's practiced really well all year. He's just brought it every single day, and he's got an infectious personality that the guys really latch onto. Not to mention his incredible style that he brings to the post the way trip flights. But LaTroy has been a great addition to our team, and as has Julius. You know, Julius is such a steady guy, and it's a fun team. It reminds me the personalities we have reminds me of a few teams ago with just the diverse personalities that we have and how it all has really melded together this year. And we hope it keeps going.
All right, let's talk about the Cowboys, and then we'll get to your favorite part of the show, the Ask Aaron questions. I don't know how much prep you did expecting it to be the Cowboys since they were the logical team to advance and play you. But
logical?
Yeah, they're the three seed. You expect the three seed to win at home. But what do you see? Is there any value to whatever prep work you did helping Matt last year get ready for them in that game? And just where's your view of the Cowboys as you get ready for them?
Well, that's a great football team. You know, I think they've had a great season. They won 12 regular season games and won at Seattle. Big win up there. They got a number of guys have had great seasons. You just look at the offense. Obviously, DeMarco had an incredible year, and he played through a broken hand. Tony had, I think, his best year statistically this year. Dez Bryant is, phenomenal season. The yards and touchdowns he put up. The offensive line, I think, has three Pro Bowlers. The right guard, seems has had a really, really good season. The center is from Wisconsin, I believe. Had a big year. Tyron Smith is a talented guy, but they played really well up front, and that's kind of been their calling card, protecting Tony and then opening up holes for DeMarco. And then off of that, obviously the play action. On defense, they have I think there's a term they call it like we-fence. Is that right? They've called themselves where they don't believe that there's maybe a big name on there, but they play really well together. I think it was on the broadcast. So it's a talented group. I mean, these guys, DeMarcus Ware left, who's a future Hall of Famer, in the offseason, and, I think, and then a couple of the corners, I believe, got hurt. Sean Lee got hurt as well. But they've replaced them with guys who really play well together. And it's a talented group. McLean has had, off of retirement, has had a really good season. Bruce Carter, I think, has five interceptions, which is really impressive. Hitchens is a very talented linebacker. They bring in some sub situations. Defensive line is very active. And it's not guys you're going to, there's not a huge name recognition. But that doesn't matter to them. They play really well together, and they're relentless. As you saw late in that game, the pass rush they put on. Right. On the back end, it's guys who are playing really well together and who play their roles really well. Obviously, no Skandrick and Carr from the years that we played against them. The safeties are playing really well, Wilcox and Church. Rod Marinelli's defenses have always been very fundamentally sound. Good tacklers. They're in the right place at the right time. They don't have missed assignments. And they all play really, really well together. So it's a Rod Marinelli defense, and they're active up front, and they're very talented on the back end.
Let's get to the Ask Aaron questions. We're running out of season, so make them good. Hashtag Ask Aaron on Twitter.
Hashtag.
I may have gotten 50 different versions of questions about the Wall Street Journal story about your sense of humor. I tried to narrow it down. The other questions I got a bunch about were the weather. So Anna or Anna,
conversation started.
If you're a fan of the Frozen films, she gets the first crack.
Is it Anna in the Frozen films?
It is, yes.
Okay.
What is your reaction to the Wall Street Journal article, and who is your favorite comedian?
I love Brian Regan.
Okay.
I've seen him, I think, five times in concert. And
he's played here a few times.
Yeah, I've seen him at the Meyer before. Brian is amazing. I love his comedy. I grew up actually watching The King of Comedy. And
interesting.
Yeah, and I've been able to see Cedric in person. Steve Harvey hosts the Family Feud now.
He does,
and he has his own show, and I think he's really funny. Yeah, the article, I'm not quite sure what the intent was on it. I can pick it apart a little bit, but I think the basis is that I'm totally fine and comfortable having an esoteric sense of humor. And what DC, what Darren Collins said about it, is actually a compliment, that my humor is algebra too. Right. I've long been a fan of Wes Anderson films. And Wes Anderson has a really dry, intelligent sense of humor. One of my favorite movies is Life Aquatic. And you could watch that movie, and for someone who doesn't have a dry sense of humor, probably wouldn't laugh the entire movie. But the humor, I think, is so subtle and deep that it's, to me, it's one of the funnier movies ever made. And I enjoy all of his films. I love The Princess Bride as well. I can't remember one time that I've ever quoted it in the locker room. But this story was written, not sure what the intent was, but the only question that this person asked me was, what's one of my favorite lines from Princess Bride? So I told him the interaction between Vizzini and Wesley as he is trying to take Buttercup, and they're going through the fact that Vizzini is no match for the Dread Pirate Roberts physically, but mentally he can take him. And so I said that line, and he wrote the article. I'm not sure what the intent was.
Well, yeah, I guess, I talked to Kevin when he was here, and I really like Kevin, so I would never criticize another journalist's approach. I thought it was actually a really good idea when he told me what he's doing, because I think you're pretty funny. Now, I'd like to think that I'm reasonably intelligent, so I am able to get some of your comedy, but I guess my only thing is you also like some stupid humor, too.
I do.
I mean, as smart as you are, there's some stuff that you laugh at that some might call, you know, lowbrow humor, right? I mean, you're not.
What are we talking, like Anchorman? Anchorman
2?
Yeah,
too? Like that, you know,
yeah,
old school,
I love those
all that
movies.
Kind
old
of stuff.
School, yeah.
You like Will Ferrell. So
Dumb and Dumber, one and two.
I haven't seen two, T.O.
T.O., yeah.
Am I it's missing
good.
Anything?
I think it's good, yeah.
I heard bad reviews.
Well.
But not from you.
Not from me. You won't get a bad review from me.
All right, so Rachel asks.
Let me just finish that out by saying, the part about JFK's middle name, I'm funnier than that. That was not used as a joke.
Okay, that was.
I don't know
what
the point of that was.
Well, let me. All right, because you've talked about that before on the show, your Saturday presentation. And I know that you used the photo that we unearthed on this show of Jerry Fontenot with Nickelback at one point. Apparently it wasn't clear enough that it was Jerry and Nickelback, so it didn't get the reaction you wanted, correct?
But that's okay.
You're okay with that.
That's what esoteric humor is all about.
But what exactly is this Saturday thing that you do? Because you do it every week, and I know that you put some real effort into it, whether it's about the humor or the message or whatever. What exactly is it?
I think the Saturday meeting is like the locker room, that like pregame. I don't think there should be cameras and stuff in there pregame. I think as far as the Saturday meeting goes, it is just a meeting where I will talk about some of the checks this week. We'll give the guys some reminders. And then every now and then I'll put some funny stuff up there to make them laugh. And over the years, the videos that I've labored out of a labor of love on my Mac with my iVideo have been a blast, and the guys have loved them. And I've shown clips that no one's ever seen before of teammates or coaches. I did a segment for years about Man of the Week and would show some unflattering photos of different players on the team.
That was mentioned
every
in the
now
story.
And then.
Yep.
I often show unflattering photos of myself. And videos that I'm not the proudest of on there, because I think in order to be funny, you have to be able to laugh at yourself. And
so what's the point of that?
The point
you
is...
You have it Saturday morning. This is Saturday morning.
The point, yeah. The point is after a long week of preparation, it's very serious to give them a serious, but then also kind of bring it back home that that we should be able to laugh together and take off some of the edge that is... A very uptight, focused week of preparation.
Okay, cool. I've always wondered about that. Rachel says, I salute your Princess Bride obsession. Will you share that with your kids someday? Is that a film that stands the test of time?
Because
you don't have any kids right now.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a great great film. I'm excited to read Carrie's new book.
Is that out now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
and you don't already have it?
I have it, yeah.
Okay,
it's called As You Wish, right? Stories from the Princess Bride. It's 25 years now.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So when did you see it? Because then you would have been, you wouldn't have seen it when you were six.
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah, 7 or 8, probably. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
It's you know, it's one of those movies. One of the first movies you see is always something that kind of sticks with you, whether in a good way or a bad way. Another movie I saw at a young age was Neverending Story.
Okay.
Which is like, in the kid's mind, that movie goes on forever. It probably does.
It feels like the Neverending Story.
But it was one of those movies that creeped me out.
Okay.
Something about the dog or weird. It's just, you know. So it was that movie that kind of creeped me out, and then there's Princess Bride that I loved.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, well, that's how I am with Rocky IV. Let's talk a little bit about the weather. Ben wants to know, do you actually like playing in the cold weather, or is it something that you have to embrace playing in Green Bay? And then Dan asks a similar question where he says, assuming no one really enjoys playing in the cold, do you still prefer cold weather games because it gives you an advantage?
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy the weather up here. I think it gives us an advantage. You know, when it's this cold, you don't do a whole lot outside in general. So my exposure to the cold, much like my teammates, I'm sure, is just the few minutes, the few hours every week that we're outside playing. So
and walk into your car.
Yeah, and walk in your car. So I think it can give us an advantage for sure, but. Not a humongous advantage. The bigger advantage is if our crowd is as loud as we hope it is, and bring it, Get Loud Lambo.
Yeah. How did you think they did with their Get Loud Lambo campaign? And what do you need from them this week?
We need that performance, you know, if not slightly more amplified, nice and loud.
Okay.
From the first play to the last.
Another weather sort of historical question. Have you ever actually seen the Ice Bowl? That's from Brandon.
I've seen clips from it, yeah.
Yeah.
And I've heard Bart talk about it in person a couple times, and it's fascinating.
Yeah.
He talked about it at the MacFun event, and I also did another event with him where he told some similar stories. But hearing Bart talk about it is so incredible when you're a fan of the history of the game.
Right.
You know, everybody's seen probably the clips of him coming over and talking to Vince, and they had a couple plays stalled, and he just couldn't get it back to the running back. They couldn't get their footing. But when he tells it, it's, you know, when Bart tells it, it's pretty special.
Yeah, it's very cool.
I don't know how they did it without, you know, modern warming technology. That had to be brutal. And kudos to the fans who stuck around, too, because that had to be even more brutal.
Yeah, and they didn't have the technology in terms of clothing and stuff like that to keep you warm either. A couple more, and then we'll let you go. Travis says, would you be interested in subbing for my curling team sometime after you win the Super Bowl?
I've had a couple tries at curling, and I actually retired from curling. I enjoy watching on TV during the Olympics because it gets so amped up, especially the pusher. Once they let it go, the yelling is awesome to me, I think. But I'm not going to.
Apparently Gruden went curling when he was here for your Monday night game. Wes Hodkowitz, who's sometimes in your locker room, went along with him. So
really,
if you ever want to go curling again, apparently Gruden would take you. Come more. I like these offbeat questions. Lucas says, with your ability to recall formations, plays, and different situations, are you a good card counter in Vegas?
No.
Is that illegal? You're not allowed to do that, right?
Yeah, it's illegal.
But you could do it, right? I mean, mentally, you would be capable of it.
I don't know. I would have to pull a Zach Galifianakis and read up on it. As he did in Hangover there.
Right. I got that reference.
Thank you, yes. Yeah. But no, I don't even know the first thing about it.
Keith says, have you ever seen a pass interference call like the Dallas Lions one before, and do you think some calls like that should be reviewable?
Well, it wasn't a pass interference call. It was a no call.
Well, it was a pass interference call, and then it was announced even, and then it was a no call, which I don't know if I've seen that quite before.
I'm a traditionalist as far as rule interpretations, other than I think instant replay is great. I know Mike Ditka, I never liked it, and for years didn't recognize the win.
The 1989 game here, yes.
Right.
You are a historian. Look at you, Don Majkowski.
Magic. Got to see Magic a couple weeks ago. I always enjoy seeing him.
Did you get to see Flanny and Rivera when they were here?
Yes, I'm Marco and Flanny before the game. That was fun. I didn't play with Marco, but I've gotten to know Marco a little bit over the years, and Flanny was great when I came in when I was a rookie, and he was kind of his last stint with us, yeah. 105. He was great.
I talked to both of them on the phone before the show, and they remain two of my favorite people to cover. They really are fun.
Yeah, they had a great crew there, didn't they, for a while. And,
well, you got a pretty good crew now, too.
Oh, I love our crew now. I don't know what the question was.
The pass interference.
Yeah,
you said
pass
you were a traditionalist.
Yeah. I think if you start replaying some of those calls, it just takes out kind of the human error that we've had in our game, the judgment calls, because then somebody else is actually, it's not much of a difference. You're still making a judgment call up in the booth. You know, I like the replay in baseball. I think that's a good thing at first base, especially with some of those calls. But I think you have to be careful how much you do there. Although I think the refs should be held to a high standard. And I don't know about the all-star crews. If they haven't worked together, I just wonder about the cohesion with guys who haven't worked together before. I wonder if it wouldn't serve better to have just the top-rated crews as a whole.
I think that's a reasonable opinion.
That is an interesting idea as opposed to an all-star crew, which it's obviously high. They all get rated individually, but there's something to be said about a team. You know, the best teams aren't always made up of the most incredible players of their positions. You look at some of the teams in baseball who spent, you know, the Yankees and Red Sox over the years spent so much money. That doesn't mean they're going to win a championship. You know, this year, who do we have in the World Series? It was, you know, Kansas City and San Fran, right?
Yes.
You know, two smaller. San Francisco's a little bit bigger market now, but it's not the biggest markets always. It's the guys that play well together, and I wonder how that would work as far as referees go.
So Mike has talked before about you guys do scouting reports on crews. So like this week, you have Gene Steratore as your referee, but you can't really do a scouting report on the crew because it's not his crew, right?
I'm sure they'll have something. They'll have something figured out. Gene is one of my favorites.
Is he?
Yeah, and he's one of the best referee, like a sports referees. He refs at a really high level. I would say there's definitely potential there for him to be an NBA ref at some point. Because I think he's been moving up, and now he's in.
He does Big Ten? I think he does.
I feel like 12 too, or he's up there.
I know I've seen him do Big Ten games.
But he's a talented ref.
And he'll keep it fair.
He should.
Last one goes to Rusty. It's a little longer. He says...
Is it an email question? It's not,
it is.
It's not 140 characters.
It is not. He wanted to quote your friend Trent Dilfer. He says, Trent Dilfer had a great quote the other day. He said, you never go tactics, you never go talent, you always go culture. Somebody right now is brewing a really special culture, a really special mindset. They embrace the hard stuff. They're not overwhelmed by the chaos of the championship run. They're living in the moment. They're not looking ahead. Those types of things are almost always what you hear a championship team say, which we appreciate Rusty giving us that quote from him. Rusty's question is, how do you feel about your team's culture? Is this a high priority for you and the other team leaders, and do the Packers have that special mindset this year for a Super Bowl run?
Well, I think I mentioned some of that earlier when we were talking about some of the guys who made contributions this year. And if you look at the team that won it in 2010, you know, we had some interesting personalities. You know, we had Eric Walden and Dyrell Briggs come in mid-season. Howard Green came over as he was driving in his car from New York to Mississippi, was it, or Louisiana?
Louisiana.
And Howard was such a big personality, and he fit so well in our team. His actually first game back in the league was against the Jets, and he went out and played great. And you know, Packer fans will remember it was him getting pressure on Ben that caused the hitting his arm and the underthrow that Nick ran back for a touchdown. But you know, that's what it takes. Like I mentioned just a second ago, it's not always the team with the biggest talent. It's a team that plays the best together. And has that chemistry, and you can definitely build some of that. A lot of it happens during training camp, but throughout the season you're building as well as you deal with adversity and the ups and downs of a season, injuries, highs, lows, frustrations, disappointments, great success, dealing with success. And I think our team has done a good job in all those phases of learning about each other and learning about us as a collective, how we respond in certain situations. That's all fine and dandy, but when it comes to the game Sunday and trying to move forward, it's about how do we put that all together for one game, because with the parity in this league and the way it's been set up, anybody can beat anybody. But when you get into playoffs, it's great team against great team. So in order to move on, you have to execute really well, and you have to stick together during the tough times. Dallas was down 14-0. Detroit had the ball and was moving. They came up with a big stop and went down and put together a long touchdown catch and run that kind of got them right back in the game.
Right.
And a lot of times it's those momentum swings that you have to deal with, the highs and lows of that. That help you to move on. 17-7 at half. They get an interception on the first play of second half and then get no points out of it. But you saw their team. They stuck together. They said, we can keep doing this. And that's what you have to deal with as a team. And obviously they showed they can deal with the adversity. And I think we have over the entire season dealt with the highs and lows. Just our last game against Detroit, you know, them coming back and tying it up and us going back out there. Defense, really responded well, and the offense getting enough points to win the game. So it's going to be a good matchup. We look forward to it. We need our fans to bring it, be loud and proud, and we're excited about the opportunity to have a home game.
We'll see what happens. If the Packers win, they will face either the Seattle Seahawks in Seattle or the Carolina Panthers back at Lambeau Field. They got to get through the Dallas Cowboys first. Either way, we will be here next week, perhaps talking about the NFC Championship game. For this week, that's it for us. This has been the Aaron Rodgers Show.